This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, June 6th, 2021. And today on the program, we have business news from All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing pay-per-view, how many pay-per-view buys it sold, ticket sales, and merchandise sales, an estimate of those today. Then, in the world of TV viewership, in this post-Showbuzz Daily world, we have hope. A new source of TV viewership is out there. Plus, some thoughts on the trends of TV viewership so far in 2021 as May comes to an end. Then, as May comes to an end, we also have information about the Google Trends data, the top most searched for names and companies in the wrestling world. And then, following up on the mad speculation that WWE might be preparing for a sale, I don't think it is, but more non-news on that subject. Plus, independent wrestling superpowers, IWTV, and Game Changer Wrestling are set to go at it as IWTV has filed a lawsuit against GCW. All that and more in the hour, but first. And now, joining us from to my slightly southeast in the region of South Buffalo, ring announcer, comedian, Dogecoin investor, Chris Gullo.
Yeah, BlackBerry investor too. You should have sold it at $19.
You're investing in BlackBerry?
Yeah, it was a meme stock short sale. Yeah. I bought it at 10 and it got up to 19 on Friday.
The Canadian company.
But I did not cash it.
BlackBerry.
Yes.
Which is really a company that's fallen off over the years, is it not?
It 100% has, but it's like GameStop and AMC. The internet gets behind it.
Does Paul Heyman still have a BlackBerry? BlackBerry, he was a big fan of the BlackBerry. Paul Heyman was.
The little pen thing, too, the head of the head. Mm-hmm.
He would carry two phones. One for texting, and one that was a BlackBerry for texting, and then another one because nobody uses BlackBerry anymore or something.
I don't know. You got to avoid debt collectors, so that's why you have that free time.
Yes, very, very true. Very true. So we've both woken up from naps today.
Yes, refreshed.
Refreshed. We've taken our power nap. Vince McMahon, big fan of the power nap. Mine was not very powerful, though. It was more of an hour-long nap, not a 15-minute mm-hmm. hour nap. So we've got things to talk about today, but I'm not the driver of this program. Chris Gullick, you are.
Yeah, and why don't we get this start going with AEW Double or Nothing pay-per-view buy notes.
Yes.
Now, WrestleNomics.com Patreon is the one that actually broke this news first. So, folks, look what you get for $5 a month at the WrestleNomics Patreon.
Yes. Patreon got it about an hour early.
Oh, sorry.
Continue. No, we're good. The latency, we're using Squadcast instead of Zencast here. The latency is wonderful here.
Well, All Elite Wrestling's Double or Nothing pay-per-view on May 30th likely came just short of the company's highest gross revenue from a single event. The show drew about $6 million total for AEW and its pay-per-view distributors and sold 115,000 buys on all platforms globally by our estimate. We are also raising our estimate of the Revolution event from 125,000 buys to 135,000 buys. The Observer's recent estimate was that Revolution sold 158,000 buys, which is 10 to 20% higher, we were told.
Yes. I can attest to all that.
I'm a little surprised it did it almost as good as Revolution. Holiday weekend, pay-per-view follow-up after the Exploder Ring.
Yes. I was very down on the prospects of this pay-per-view because of the Exploding Ring fiasco. But no, I overestimated the effect of that. This did pretty well, considering. I think the card was not terribly strong. You had a Stadium Stampede match that was headlining after you'd already done Blood and Guts, which was a heavier match. I mean, not just in delivery, but I think in terms of hype. And this is a rematch of a different kind of a match that had more of a, you'd expect to have more of a comedic element, despite their pitch that it wasn't going to be comedic.
More cinematic.
Yeah, a three-way title match. So maybe I'm projecting my own taste in terms of the anticipation for this card. But it did pretty well. Their second biggest, as you mentioned, I think. Their second biggest pay-per-view sale ever. We talk about pay-per-view buys, not buy rates. Buy rates are a thing of the past because the pay-per-view universe is now saturated. You still have to put buy rate, though, in the SEO because that's what people are still searching for, of course. So I did a calculation of the gross that this event generated. So all of the revenue that this event generated. So we're talking about three different areas of revenue. So pay-per-view, which is by far the biggest because you've got hundreds of thousands of customers participating in that. And then you've got the ticket sales and the merchandise sales at the venue. So this was, I think, the second event from AEW that was held at full capacity. The first one was the night before, the TV taping. Mm-hmm. So this is the second one. And this had approximately 5,000 seat capacity. I believe they did just over 5,000 total. Paid attendance, according to the Observer, was 4,700. Observer also reporting that the gate was 300,000. So that's something like, I think, more than three times what the Revolution show did with its limited capacity, right? 1,150 was the paid attendance for that. I think that's also according to the Observer, and that comes out to $75,000. So it ends up with a gross that's pretty close to one another. I've got something around 6.1 million for this show, 6.8 million for the other show. And the net, because the pay-per-view carriers take such a majority, roughly 55% of the pay-per-view sales, the net comes out to be almost the same. We're getting into precision where I feel less confident about what the actual difference is, but about $3 million for each of those shows in terms of the money that actually ends up in AEW's bank account. So pretty similar in terms of the money that AEW got, because AEW probably gets a far larger portion of the ticket sales. Maybe there's some Ticketmaster service fees and things like that they have to share that money with. But AEW making a similar amount of money in all likelihood for this event versus the Revolution event.
They also had a fan fest the day before. So it's Friday was the Live Dynamite, Saturday was the fan fest, Sunday was the pay-per-view. So fan fest money, I'm not sure obviously those numbers, but that I'm sure does help to make it put it over Revolution.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And who knows what they drew there, meet and greets and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
And that sounds like something that they're going to do going forward, right?
With Sunday pay-per-views, that makes sense.
And they're going to continue to do Sunday pay-per-views?
Well, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the next one's on a Saturday, though. Maybe it's on a Sunday. But.
Yeah, there's something about what the relation to holidays. Anyway, this is not on our prepared run sheet here. But I know Tony Khan did say that the quarterly specials that they're going to have on TNT, even after the move to CBS, the quarterly specials are going to be on Saturday. He told Busted Open this week. So there's that.
All right, so we're going to move on to a little viewership. And we talked about WrestleNomics, you know, breaking the news on the pay-per-view buys. Well, in a world where no one knows where to find all these ratings and all that.
Without Showbuzz Daily.
Exactly. WrestleNomics has put it all together on the Patreon and for the spreadsheet. And
But guess what I found, which has apparently existed for a while, and nobody told me.
That's what this is where I was going to lead into.
There is a website with a URL, spoilertv.com, and this is very similar to Showbiz Daily. In fact, it's much more active than Showbiz Daily. There's all sorts of stuff going on here. I just found it yesterday. And I haven't had enough time to really look through it all, but they're doing a top 150 in cable. They are sorting it by P18 to 49. The difference is Showbiz Daily would do cable originals. This is including everything, not just originals. So we're seeing the performance of Big Bang Theory on TBS, which does really well in 1849, apparently. Friends reruns on a network that's listed as NAN that I don't know. Is that syndication? I don't know what that is in any event. They're reporting ratings not very quickly. It looks like there's a substantial delay in when they actually publish the ratings. But that's where I think a lot of people are getting some of these ratings from. So they're probably clued in. Somehow they were clued into this a few days before I was. So top 100, not top 150, though. So that cuts off our access to Impact and the Dark Side of the Ring, which finished somewhere in the 120s, 140s area most of the time. So we still don't have ratings for those unless I start to bug people about ratings, which I'm trying to not do.
All right, well, let's break it down. We're going to start with May 28th's SmackDown that did a little over 1.9 million overall viewers with a 0.50 in 18 to 49, pretty much the same exact numbers it had from May 21st.
Yes, and we got the overnight for this past Friday. It looks similar. I always think that the overnight number for SmackDown is just less, it's less precise. So we were seeing something like 1.87 million viewers. That might end up being slightly up from the week that we're talking about right now. Demo rating 0.5, so similar. But anyway.
So maybe it was a little bit due to Double or Nothing, but the Mick Foley biography on Sunday, May 30th, only did 518,000 overall with a 0.20 in 1849. That is down from 767,000 for the Shawn Michaels that had a 0.29 in 1849.
Mm-hmm. Really affected by I wonder what the ratings were for Woo, though, you know? Maybe. well, you did have, well, I mean, you got 115,000 buys. That's worldwide. If you figure about 70% of that was U.S., which is the general assumption of the U.S. to international breakdown, 70-30. So what have I got here? Roughly 95,000 domestic pay-per-view buys. And that would be households, not just viewers. So there's a couple hundred thousand maybe at most. I don't know.
Maybe it's something to do with the Mick Foley story. It's just a good story. Yeah, he took some bad bumps and all that, but he's a great guy. He's have a great family. Like, there's no dark period other than the bumps.
And this Michaels, but this, I think again, this Michaels pay-per-view was going head-to-head with, This Michaels biography was going head-to-head with, WrestleMania Backlash, right?
Yeah. So I think holiday weekend may have something to do with it too. Who knows? But you know, the old saying, you're always going to be running against something else.
Yes.
Most Wanted Treasures, which was the follow-up for the Mick Foley biography on Sunday, did 455,000, so almost what biography did, with a 0.18 in 18 to 49. The week before, we don't have 18 to 49, but we have 497 overall, so just a small drop. And that was the Jake the Snake episode. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting week because...
This is a Jake the Snake week, is it not?
Yeah, well... I'd Most Wanted Treasures, he pretty much blamed Honky Tonk Man giving him a hard guitar shot on his drug addiction, when on Thursday, I'm pretty sure we saw what causes drug addiction growing up being a child of Grizzly Smith. I don't think Honky Tonk Man's headshot had anything to do with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with blaming Honky Tonk Man for more things. Yes.
And Monday Night Raw, on Memorial Day itself, a little over 1.5 million, 0.44 in the 18 to 49. Definitely a drop from a few weeks back from May 10th. So we're seeing that May slide at 1.8 overall on May 10th and a 0.53 in 18 to 49. So you said it, that May slide is continuing for Raw.
Yeah, May is the time after WrestleMania, but also it's going against the NBA playoffs is everyone's latest excuse. We're now in the territory of like these are the five the bottom five all-time episodes in terms of viewership for Raw. Go ahead and talk about NXT, and I've just got some thoughts about the wider scope, the monthly stuff, and what we have to talk about Dynamite too. Go ahead.
Yeah, so for NXT, 668,000 overall in the June 1st episode. We do not have an 18-49 demo yet, but that was from the week before, 700,000 overall, and only a 0.13 in 18-49. Mm-hmm. And then do you want me to get into Dynamite?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, all right, in Dynamite, Friday night Dynamite, 10 o'clock live. 526,000 overall with a 0.20 in the 18-49. And if you compare that to the Wednesday episode for May 19th, so pretty much our last Wednesday episode, 820,000 overall with a 0.28 in 18-49. So a little slide for having that time slot.
Huge slide.
Yeah, huge slide, yeah. Sliding for having that time
slot. Down 36% in total audience, down 29%. In the only thing that matters to them, the key demo. So I think this, we can talk about this now. This gives you an idea, I think, of what's possible for Rampage when it's on Friday night. So we know that, the Observer, which gets their quarter hours, Dynamite is Rampage is going to be a 1 hour program. It averaged for the first hour, which was higher, 291,000 viewers in the key demo, 587 viewers in total audience. Anyway, it dropped about 20% for the second hour. So I think maybe 500,000 viewers is what Rampage could do.
On a Friday night at 10 o'clock, that's really good.
It probably is. The lead in from SmackDown. So I know Dave thinks, this week, this past Friday, we're talking about two Fridays ago, Friday, Dave thinks that the number is up for the most recent episode. We'll get a real number, a final number, this coming week early, probably. Hopefully TVspoiler.com will have it, hopefully Monday afternoon, maybe is the earliest I could see that coming out. But I think an interesting thing to think about is when Rampage starts, is it not going to take a bite out of Dynamite? Is it not going to cannibalize the amount of time that people are willing to spend watching Dynamite? If Dynamite is, averaging, let's see, in May, they averaged, let's take the median, the typical, Dynamite in May, they did 879,000 viewers. So just under 900,000, about 207. I'm looking at NXT there. Oh, okay. But about 380,000 viewers in 18-49. I would think if you're asking people to watch an additional hour of your brand's programming, there may be, and I don't know, of course, there's going to be hardcores on the far side of the bell curve who are fine with it and they just consume all 3 hours. I would think there's more of a willingness. Now I'm just thinking psychologically here. There's more of a willingness to say, all right, I've got my fill of AEW because I've watched Rampage or vice versa. And now I don't feel the urgency as much to watch one program or the other. You're spreading yourself out a little bit thinner, I think. So I think there's a possibility that it will have an effect on Dynamite's viewership.
To your point with that, one of probably the great things about AEW could be its fault, where there's something for everybody, right? So if you like a certain style of wrestling or a certain type of wrestler, it's on Dynamite. It might be as some other stuff you don't like. Like, for example, if you're a fan of FTR style, but maybe you don't really like the Young Bucks or Matt Sydal or stuff like that. Now, if you know, Friday night on Rampage, FTR, or I like Christian Cage, they're on that, but they're not on Dynamite this week, I'll just watch Rampage or vice versa. That might have a little bit of what carves out.
Mm-hmm. And so looking at the monthly patterns here, SmackDown has been on the decline pretty consistently from the beginning of the new year, at least in 18-49. the trend is not as strong in total audience, but there is a downward trend for SmackDown too. In total audience for Raw, it is remarkably flat for the first 5 months of this year. A little bit of a declining trend in 1849, especially this month, May, where they're down substantially. NXT is up slightly. They're doing just above where they were in the Wednesday Night War era. So their median viewership for May was 699, and that's just above where they were in January through March, where they're doing 650, 662, 678. So moving to Tuesday has not really helped them. I'm sure there's excuses that you can point to, and this is only the first month, but I got to think they're disappointed with how that's going. Dynamite.
I'd imagine they thought they were going to do 800 plus overall, with maybe 0.20 plus in the 18 to 49.
Yeah. Now 18 to 49 for Dynamite is actually similar. April they did really well with the median viewership in 18 to 49, 457, but they did 380 for May, which is right on par with where they were for January, February, March. So, you know, 384 in January, 404 in February, 384 in March, and then 380 for this May. And that's a median. That shouldn't be affected by this May 28th Friday Dynamite, because we're using a median here, not an average. So maybe it's just the NBA playoffs. When did the NBA where are we at with the NBA playoffs right now?
Well, I don't know, if I think we looked at it last time, and it's not ending till like end of June, early July.
That's right.
Let's see here. I used to be a huge basketball fan. Mm-hmm. I don't follow as much anymore. Let's see here. Looks like we are going into the second round now, it looks like. Mm-hmm. Because I got a lot of game ones here.
And then there'll be fewer games as we go, but more highly viewed games as we go as well.
So, all right. We will moving on to Google Trends.
Wait, I got more to say. So we've also got new members of the board of directors on the Lightshed podcast. Brandon Ross, the stock analyst who covers WWE, had some comments. He was talking with Rich Greenfield about how they're bringing in content people, and they're talking about Steve Coonan and Connor Schell. So Steve Coonan formerly worked at Turner. Connor Schell is the 30 for 30 guy of ESPN. And Brandon Ross has been, as I guess you don't hear a ton from these other stock analysts publicly, but it has been one of the stock analysts, one of the few that I've heard from who will say things to the effect of, you know, a big problem for WWE though is the creative, and the ratings are affected by the creative. And you can bring in all these great people to make great deals, and you can bring in, you know, great staff, and you can bring in members of the board of directors who are going to help you produce great content and get you really well positioned. But ultimately it's about the creative. And Brandon Ross was saying something to the effect of, you know, Raw just hit its all time low, or I think it's second lowest rating ever. And is Vince going to share control or bring someone in to help him or relinquish control? And no, he's never going to do that. He's never done that. Sure, there's been times where he's been on trial and he's brought in, Jerry Jarrett for a minute, right? But
Jerry Jarrett was under the impression he was going to take over the company if Vince went to jail, but it's Richard.
Vince would have booked that from jail. Vince would have booked that promotion from jail. You could put Vince McMahon in prison, he will book it from prison. Bruce Pritchard will go and talk on the phone through the glass window with Vince McMahon, and he will book it that way if he has to.
Send me some ramen noodles and a pudding cup, goddammit. Or pudding cup, I said pudding. Pudding cup, goddammit. I got a book Raw.
Yeah. So I've been doing...
That would have been great. good for his family, he didn't go to jail. But, like, if that would have happened and he would have booked the company?
Yeah. So I've been doing some math here. I've been learning about slope, which I couldn't even begin to tell you. I think this is something that you know, we may have learned about in statistics. You took like a statistics class in college. So I'm multiplying slope by R squared. R squared should tell you how consistent, how predictable the trend is. So is it random or is it consistent and seemingly meaningful or relevant? And I'm multiplying the R squared by the slope. So the slope is just sort of the, I guess, like the angle of the trend might be a way to think about it. If it's a positive number, that means there's a really strong up and to the right trend. If it's negative, and we'll talk about this a bit too, when we do Google Trends in a minute. But if it's a negative slope, then it's a really down to the right trend. And what you see is, so I've taken just the median for each month for each of these programs. And, you know, in 2020, we were definitely on a trajectory where AEW is either flat or slightly up. Raw and SmackDown were definitely gradually declining. And, McTodd Martin was talking about this with Wade earlier this week. If you extrapolate that over a long enough period of time, eventually those lines are going to intersect. So this prompted me to bust out the slope and R squared measurement. So we're still, May might be a weird month because you got Dynamite and June too. I think June, I'm not sure that we're going to have any Wednesday Night Dynamite in June. So maybe June will be a throwaway month actually. We're still
going to have Dynamite on a Saturday on June 26th.
Really?
Yeah.
So you can see why it's a cost to them to move to TBS, but also maybe on balance, a good thing. So they won't be preempted like this in the future. Cause this is really going to just blow up their month, and hopefully it won't affect, for their sake, won't affect the gathering of fans, and won't create so much friction for fans that it causes any long-term effect to their viewership. In any event, what we're seeing even through January, February, March, before we get to April, where I think now we're in a different era, where because of the end of the Wednesday Night War, you should see artificial upticks for Dynamite and for NXT. So I think that kind of has to be separated in the measurement, but I'm still seeing in monthly medians for January, February, March, even though everyone felt like, including me, that the trend had slowed down or stopped for AEW getting closer and closer to Raw. We're still seeing a slow slide of Raw and SmackDown, which is kind of what, even if those were booked well, even if the creative was good and they were cultivating stars and they were engaging fans so that they had more linear eyeballs, you would expect, just because it's on linear TV, to be going down somewhat. And it is. But we're seeing over January, February, March, again, this is before April, before the Wednesday War ends, you're seeing Dynamite climb a bit, or at least to stay straight. And you are seeing NXT actually climb through January, February, March. And NXT really gained some ground on AEW at the end of the Wednesday Night War.
I think a big factor, and you're going to notice, I expect very good draws when AEW goes on the road. And now there's been some rumblings that NXT is going to start at least house shows. So you're going to see, I think, pretty well-attended events. But yet you're going to continue to see a slide in TV ratings. And you got to remember, this is a whole country that wasn't able to do anything last summer because of COVID. I just think it's the itch of people. Finally, the weather's nice in almost all the country and they want to go out and do things, and they weren't able to do these things last year. And a lot of people have a buildup of money, whether they didn't spend it or they were getting all the extra incentives or whatever. I know it's such a blanket statement, but I think that's a really big factor on most stuff probably sliding on live television.
I see what you're saying. This is Joe Biden's fault, that he gave Americans too much money, and now they don't want to watch wrestling. I know what you're saying.
It's the same. People have money to go do things.
They don't want to relax at night and watch WWE Raw for 3 hours. They got money to go out and do things. You know, of course, it's that way. So I think another point to make. The WWE investor believes that, oh, well, you know, when they get back on the road, you know, the crowd is so important to pro wrestling. It's so important to the TV that, you know, that's really what they need. And more than any other sport out there, really. And all this is true. More than any other sport out there, I think wrestling was really the one that was affected the most by COVID because they couldn't have a crowd there. You can do NFL games, NBA games, and MLB games without a crowd, and you've still gotten most of the value there still. But with wrestling is really, more than any other, is about how you manipulate the crowd and how the crowd reacts. That's all true. So when WWE gets back on the road, their ratings are going to get better. Don't worry. Yeah, that's because they've been doing this for 15 months now with no crowd. But when they get their crowd back, you know, the ratings have been down, but they'll get the crowd back and then the ratings will come back too. And you'll see that for 2 weeks and then it'll go back to where it was because the program is what it is and it doesn't engage fans. It turns them off. So I think that's what's going to happen. July, we'll see it. And we talked about this before. We will definitely measure it. Maybe I'll be wrong.
All right. Well, speaking of measuring, Google Trends, yes, where you can actually find the full 6-page report that came out on Thursday, if you're a member of the WrestleNomics Patreon. But yeah, you want to break down the Google Trends,
yes,
for this week.
So the Google Trends reports is a 6-page report. So I've got this broken down by company, by WWE personalities, by AEW personalities, and by New Japan personalities. To go any lower than that, we're getting into people who don't have Google Trends profiles. But we can talk about the companies first. In a lot of ways, that's interesting. So WWE, of course, is by far the leader. So we're looking at 15 different promotions here, promotions that I'm guessing are the biggest 15 biggest, most searched for promotions in the world. So that is WWE, AEW, New Japan, Impact, Stardom, Dragon Gate, which is all one word, by the way, Ring of Honor, MLW, All Japan Pro Wrestling, AAA, NOAH, NWA, CMLL, Big Japan, DDT, in that order, by the way. Of course, WWE is by far the biggest. WWE is some 7 times greater in search volume in May than AEW, its next nearest competitor. Of course, WWE is a media company. They are just like Marvel. AEW is just a wrestling company, which I think is preposterous. I'm about to get sidetracked. This idea that WWE, oh, yeah, it's a sports entertainment. They're not a wrestling company.
It's like Disney.
It's I don't know. It's just semantics, I think. How would a wrestling company be different than a media company? They're selling video. They want to monetize their business the best that they can. If they have a multi-decade store of legacy intellectual property like WWE does, they want to license all these brands and all these trademarks as much as they can, whether it's Young Rock or the Page movie. They want to license all of their IP across consumer products categories. They want to monetize their TV rights to the max. How would that be any different if they decided to call themselves a wrestling company? I think it's an aspiration to be accepted into a business world that they don't feel accepted in if they just call themselves wrestling.
I mean, UFC calls themselves a mixed martial arts company, and they do all the same things you talked about.
Yeah. Anyway, AEW is about 7 times behind WWE. We have no absolute numbers here. I can't tell you what the absolute numbers of searches are. That's not what Google Trends does. They give you a relative measurement. And in Google Trends, if you go to trends.google.com, you can type in up to 5 different categories, profiles or strings, whatever you want. But to get more than 5, I've written a script that allows me to grab hundreds at a time and measure them all in this on the same scale. So AEW is on a worldwide basis a 7th of WWE's search volume, but on the US they're about 4.5. WWE is about 4.5 times the search volume of AEW. Impact Wrestling is the number 2 or number 3 in the US. New Japan, this is in May, by the way, just for May. New Japan, number 4 in the U.S., Ring of Honor, number 5, MLW, number 6, NWA, AAA, All Japan. I think All Japan is really a beneficiary, just like Impact is, in fact, a beneficiary of this enormous legacy where you're searching for things that are not necessarily current for the, for this brand. You may be searching for the June 3rd, 1994 classic between Toshiaki Kawada and Mitsuharu Misawa from the Nippon Budokan, you know, and that's got really nothing to do with the current All Japan product with Kento Miyahara. But anyway, I'm also doing here, but by the way, let's talk about Japan. Japan, the most searched for company is, you have any guesses, Chris Gull?
In Japan, the most searched for company?
Yes. Are you looking at the report? Probably,
no, I'm not looking at
it. No spoilers in front of you. Okay.
No spoilers. It's probably WWE, actually, isn't it?
Wrong. It is New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I figured, I thought it was a trick question.
New Japan is... These numbers are, do not represent absolute values, but New Japan is rated here at a 165. WWE is number three. This is just for the month of May, but I expect the you know, generally it, this is the case. WWE is at a 33. Again, New Japan at a 165. New Japan is number three. I'm sorry. WWE is number three. New Japan is number one. Who's number two?
I'm guessing Stardom.
Stardom is number two. Also a Bushiroad company. Who's number four in Japan? Number four.
AEW?
No.
DDT?
No.
Dragon Gate. I'm just going down the gauntlet.
Dragon Gate is number four, followed by NOAH, All Japan Pro Wrestling, DDT. DDT does not as well as I thought they would before I started studying all this stuff. Big Japan, then AEW and Impact at 9 and 10. There's that. Mexico, most searched for wrestling company in Mexico.
Triple A?
No.
CMLL?
No, WWE.
Okay, so that would have been, my answer would have worked for that one.
By a wide margin, too. WWE having a value of 96. The number two is Triple A. 15. 96 to 15. Triple A.
This is probably why Nikon sees that as a market he wants to tap into.
He's probably studying the Google trends. I don't know. Yeah, CMLL.
He's a subscriber under a fake name.
Yes. We do have some interesting people who are subscribers, though, whose privacy shall be protected. But anyway, CMLL at number three with an 8. So we got 15 for AAA and 8 for CMLL. Yeah. But other than that, those are the rankings, right? But I'm also trying to track here. And if you're a math expert and you think this is not a good way to track this, let me know, because I'm not a math expert. I'm just a philosophy major who's been spending most of his life in Excel spreadsheets for the last 5 years. So I'm doing basically what I said before. I'm multiplying slope by R squared, and I'm saying these are the power, the strength. This is the strength of the trend. Is there ice in that glass, Chris Gullo? Didn't I tell you that there's no ice allowed on WrestleNomics Radio?
I was being very quiet with him. Man. I mean, ice cold lemonade on a summer day over ice.
That's true. All right.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So the strength of the trend, and there's positive trends and negative trends. And we're only going to talk about positive trends and negative trends when it comes to companies, not when it comes to people, because I think with people, it becomes more misleading because you're getting people coming off a peak. When you're talking about a company, though, I think it makes more sense because it's more of a general representation of the name recognition, the mind share. Whereas, say, for example, The Undertaker. Undertaker has this huge spike in November, and it comes down after that. I don't think it's informative to say, oh, well, The Undertaker's trend is really negative now. Of course it is. Anyway, the strongest trend is by far AEW. Over this is an 8th month trend. Strongest 8th month trend is AEW, followed by Stardom, which I think, I don't know, this just sort of affirms my intuition. So I don't know if I'm guilty of confirmation bias here, but I do see those two companies as the two companies with the strongest upward trajectory in the wrestling space. These are worldwide trends, by the way. We're not breaking this down by region today. Followed by that, we've got a slightly strong trend for MLW as well. And everybody else is just sort of below that, is zero or below. With New Japan has the weakest, the most negative trend. NWE is very, very, very slightly negative over 8 months. So I think, I guess I've argued before, I think Google search, web search is meaningful, especially if you're looking at it over a broad period of time. Obviously, Google web search, not all Google web search is created equal and is desirable. June 2007 is the peak for WWE, because that's when the Chris Benoit murders happened, the Benoit family deaths happen. So we will move on to wrestlers. And you have not looked at this, Chris Gullo?
I have not.
So I've got this true-false category with who's regular and who's not with WWE, because there are so many people. I posted part of this on Twitter, the top 10, and this triggers everybody to say, because it's loaded with Dwayne Johnson and Bad Bunny and Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin, yeah, and Triple H, and all these people are not regularly appearing on TV. So you get the quote tweets, which makes people advertise our product. So, yeah. Who's number one in WWE for web search among regular people who actually appear on TV on a regular basis?
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns, by far, in May, a 63 to the next closest competitor, sports entertainer, Rey Mysterio at a 20. 63, Roman Reigns. Number two, Rey Mysterio at a 20. So that's what, a third? A third. This is a mass show. A third.
And some of the nostalgia probably helps Mysterio too.
That's true. Legacy nostalgia IP. Searches. Great point. Yeah. Impact Wrestling, All Japan Pro Wrestling, Rey Mysterio. Number three, somebody else with a lot of legacy IP. I'm talking about only regulars here. Only people actually regulars on TV.
Edge?
Randy Orton. Oh. I think I excluded Edge from the
because he hasn't been on TV for
full time. And full time was full time active. These are kind of arbitrary true false things here. But yeah, Randy Orton at number three. Number four, Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks, Daniel Bryan, The Usos, Asuka, Charlotte Flair, Seth Rollins, the newly released Braun Strowman. Number 14, you also got above him, Seth Rollins at 10, The Miz, Jeff Hardy, Bray Wyatt. This is just a ranking for May, by the way. The strongest trends. The no longer under contract Daniel Bryan, which a lot of the search activity, I think, probably has to do with that fact that people want to know, is Daniel Bryan still with WWE? Is it probably a thing that people have been searching for lately? Number two, and I think this is meaningful, this is confirming some intuitions, Bobby Lashley. This is strength of trend, by the way. Bobby Lashley, 8 month trend. Cesaro, number three. Asuka, number four. Can you put any narrative to that?
For Asuka, no. I mean, Cesaro and Lashley make sense. I mean, the only thing I think was Asuka did have the title for a while, and she seems to be in the picture still. So when people are, like, looking up Rhea Ripley, Asuka, or Asuka, Charlotte.
Number five, Bianca Belair.
Okay, and number, that makes sense.
Number six, strength of trend. Charlotte Flair. I guess, yeah, Alexa. So I'm looking at the women wrestlers. Alexa Bliss, Sasha Banks, Asuka, Charlotte Flair. Yeah. I'll have to maybe do like a women only category to really fire up the Twitter avatars later. AEW, I don't spend too much time belaboring all this, but AEW by far, Big Show is the leader. He's at a 116. The next closest is Jon Moxley at an 80, followed by Chris Jericho, Sting, Kenny Omega. Number six for May, the heavily featured Jake Roberts across various television programs. This is May, though. His TV shows were, that we just talked about, though, Dark Side and the A&E stuff, the Hidden Treasures thing. That was in June.
Yeah, but Hidden Treasures was May 30th. but he was heavily featured on the Ultimate Warrior Dark Side of the Ring.
And Hidden Treasures was May 30th.
Yes.
Yes. So it was May. Okay. Jake Roberts, Miro, Matt Hardy, Britt Baker at number 9. More on her later. Dustin Rhodes, Goldust, still up there. Above his brother by one slot, Cody Rhodes.
I'm intrigued to see where Mark Henry's going to fit in.
Yeah, because this is May, I did not put Mark Henry in the AEW category, but next month, he should be there. Strength of trend, number 1 over this 8-month period, Britt Baker. Number 2, Tainara Conti. Number 3, Anthony Ogogo. These all make sense as people who have risen to more prominent positions in AEW over this time. And number 4, the biggest rising star of all, Tony Khan. Christian Cage at number 5, which makes sense because he's debuted with AEW over this time. Number 6, Chris Statlander, sort of makes sense. She's returned. And Darby Allin. And that's enough of listing names. New Japan Pro Wrestling, number 1 this month. He is not always number 1. The thing is, like, the number 1 slots here are pretty consistent. You got Roman Reigns is always number 1. Or if we look at it, include full-timers, you got Dwayne Johnson by Bad Bunny. Non-full-timers, I mean. And the Big Show, maybe Jericho, number 1. But this one's a little bit more competitive when we're talking about New Japan. Number 1 this month, Hiroshi Tanahashi. As opposed to, let's see, is Tanahashi always number 1? No, above him in April was Will Ospreay for Worldwide Search. Will Ospreay is number 2 this month for New Japan, followed by Kota Ibushi. Kota Ibushi actually was number 1 in April. It went Ibushi, Ospreay, Tanahashi, followed by Okada this month. Yuji Nagata, anti-aging hero, up at number 5. I think that's he's had a surge of search in April and May, probably related to his appearance on AEW. Number 1 strongest trend over the 8-month period, Yuji Nagata, followed by Will Ospreay, followed by Shingo Takagi, Yo Satoshi Kojima, or as some people call him, Kojima. We can't be giving Japanese people given names here on Impact Wrestling. Come on. That's asking too much of Americans. Tomoaki Honma, Kota Ibushi, PJ Black, Taichi, El Phantasmo. Yeah, that's the Google Trends. Any thoughts on that? Questions? Comments?
I mean, the New Japan is interesting how competitive it is. And you, like, mentioned the top 5, and I feel like somebody like Naito could sneak in there.
He's 7. 7.
So.
Suzuki finished above him at 6.
Okay, yeah. All right, so we're going to move on to a little bit of a follow-up from, which was a Patreon exclusive. We talked about, could a WWE sale happen?
Mm-hmm. If you've wondered why we haven't talked about this yet, it's because we already talked about it on Wednesday. By the way, update. I don't know. I haven't checked the news. Has WWE sold yet?
They have not.
Has WWE been acquired by Amazon?
They have not.
Okay. I hadn't heard if there was any update on that.
But yeah, so one of the things that you mentioned was the stock price.
Yes.
And if
is it surging?
There was really an uncertainty. Right?
It's surging. The volume is exploding through the roof. Blue Meanie told, told me that this has got to be a sale. A former WWE writer tweeted something. Joel Gertner thinks so too. is NBC Universal buying it yet? What about Disney?
No. Okay. But they could be sold. That was my point.
They could be sold. Yes.
Yes. But yeah. So yeah. Not a big uptick. 80 cents. But just might just be a nature of the beast. The way the stock market's been all week. So
the stock price has not moved. The volume did not exhibit any unusual behavior. The finance media website, Benzinga. Did quote my tweet. So now the phrase or the sentence, even the stock market is no selling wrestling Twitter, is now a published sentence in financial media. By the way, so I was looking into this more. You know, the point is people believe that all of these employee layoffs and talent cuts are, as one person said, a textbook example of a company that is preparing to be sold. cleaning the shelves off, getting it ready for mergers and acquisitions. So I looked into this idea that, you know, they're cutting a lot of talent, which they have, something like, I don't know, it's probably upwards of 20 wrestlers. We reviewed it in detail on the Patreon for subscribers. There had about a 45-minute talk talking about this, but they cut somewhere around, you know, 20, 25, probably maybe more than that wrestlers, including 25. NXT wrestlers over the last couple months. So I was looking at, you know, what's the difference in the number of wrestlers on the roster from January, the beginning of this year, to June. I was really surprised at the difference. What do you think the net difference is in the number of wrestlers January to June? How many fewer wrestlers are on the roster?
Honestly, probably not many. Maybe like five, because they have signed quite a few recruitment classes in that period.
Yeah, it's three. Three, actually. Okay. There's three fewer wrestlers on the roster now.
Well, you know, we keep hearing about these rumored NXT UK cuts and Performance Center cuts that are supposed to be happening the last 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So.
No, I think this is just a company that's trying to become more profitable as companies tend to do.
All right. So let's go to looks to be our last story of today, but it should be an interesting one. We very rarely talk independent wrestling in detail on here, but we are going to right now, as there is a big lawsuit going on between IWTV and Game Changer Wrestling. The Times Leader, which covers about Northeast Pennsylvania, released an article where independentwrestling.tv, which is Pennsylvania-based, has sued Game Changer Wrestling, New Jersey-based. IWTV accuses GCW of breaching their contract by holding pay-per-view events. IWTV claims to be out $500,000. IWTV and GCW agreed to a contract on March 19, 2020, and the suit suggests that independentwrestling.tv would film, produce, and distribute the New Jersey company's professional wrestling bouts. The suit also says that IWTV and GC Wrestling agreed to terms that included IWTV having exclusive rights to hold pay-per-view events for Game Changer. The complaint claims that GCW informed IWTV on December 1st that GCW intended to breach the agreement by producing live pay-per-view events through an alternate platform, presumably Fight. The suit also claims that GCW produced 36 pay-per-view events from December 5th and May 15th, which IWTV claims were a violation of the signed distribution agreement between the parties. The suit says that the damages cannot be calculated until Game Changer provides the full amount of revenue garnered by the pay-per-view events, but it is believed that the damages are in excess of $500,000. So,
$500,000.
This is going to tear independent wrestling Twitter apart.
You think so?
It already has.
Has it?
Oh. Yeah, fans, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. I should probably say that I've done a little bit of work for IWTV, just sort of really short-term contract work for them. I think it's been over a year since I have. Obviously, I've wrestled on some shows that have appeared on IWTV live, and of course, they've got a huge library that you and I are both probably all over.
Yeah. I've worked for Game Changer once.
Have you? Oh, okay. Was that a WrestleMania weekend thing?
Yeah, I did like a ref running spot.
Right. So my understanding is that so GCW was annoyed that they found out IWTV was not keeping the masters of GCW's events. It's not clear to me if there was a business opportunity that was presented to GCW and they wanted the masters, so they could capitalize on that opportunity. But somewhere after that, they decided to start producing pay-per-views with another company, presumably Fight. IWTV said that's a breach of contract. GCW went forward and did it anyway. And it's unclear what the contract says, of course. This is being fought in Pennsylvania, which does not – we are not able to find any public filings on this yet. Maybe that's something that someone will get a hold of at some future time, though. We'll see what happens. But, so $500,000, maybe that's a strategic thing, to force their hand into something. But $500,000 over 36 events, even if we forgot about a split, I don't know if a split should be considered in that with the pay-per-view provider, which would take a majority of it, just as we were discussing, in the case of AEW. But if you did 36 events and you generated $500,000 over 36 events, and say you sold buys at $10 a piece, you'd have to average about 1,400 buys per event, which I don't think is happening. I would be very surprised if GCW, for all of their events, on average, surely some of them, but on average, 1,400 buys per event? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, like WrestleMania weekend, those shows, yes. But just like a regular show on a Saturday in New Jersey, every one of those doing that well?
Now, maybe I'm just thinking about this the wrong way. Maybe IWTV thinks that the value that they would have been able to generate somehow through subscriptions, their subscription service, obviously, the value that they would have been able to generate is more than the math that I'm doing here, where you'd have to average 1,400.
So here is the issue with the 36 events, is that a good chunk of them were on January 30th for the 24 hours Fight Forever fundraiser that Game Changer Wrestling did to raise money and all that.
Yeah.
So, and that's a good chunk of them, maybe almost a quarter of the events or around there. Yes. So if they're using that, those shows were free on YouTube. They were not on Fight. That was a YouTube 24 hour. So that would take a chunk into that 500,000. But I mean, if you have all the WrestleMania weekend events, which I think would have been the most financial, especially Bloodsport, and the spring break and the For the Culture events. But I mean, 500,000 might be an overestimate, but I mean, IWTV is going to go for it. Don't blame them.
Yeah. And it may just, you know, many lawsuits end up getting settled before they ever go to trial or whatever. But, you know, maybe we end up seeing the contract made public through disclosure and public filings, if we can even find anything public on this to begin with. In a WrestleNomics curiosity standpoint, maybe we'll get they're basically asking them to disclose records of their sales, it seems like. So maybe we'll get some information about that, about how well those GCW events sold for them on pay-per-view. So we'll see.
It's going to be really interesting, because we haven't seen anything really like this in this type of dollar amount for independent companies.
Well, with Evolve, remember, there's a lawsuit between Evolve and Flow Slam, and we have numbers there. I did an article for Fightful. I'm not finding it quickly, but I am finding an episode of WrestleNomics Radio from 2017 entitled Flow Money, Flow Problems. But anyway, I don't know. Evolve claimed to be doing a... And these weren't like the most detailed records either. They were like an Excel spreadsheet that anybody could have just typed numbers into.
We've worked for independent promotions. It's not this elaborate QuickBooks or anything. They're just writing like... Sometimes you just have a guy go out there, hey, count how many people we have here.
Yes. Independent wrestling, at least in many cases, not great record keeping happening.
So this will probably be settled by the court.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's the best thing for independent wrestling to have GCW be cooperating with IWTV. It's unfortunate that this happened.
Because they are traveling and they are right now the most popular independent promotion. Mm-hmm. You know, probably the most popular promotion doesn't have television for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're running Wyoming. Like, they're going all over.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, so any other thoughts on this?
No. Any other thoughts or questions about anything we've discussed today?
Not off the top of my head.
Any thoughts about who will acquire WWE? Any insight or inside news on the bidding that may or may not be happening? Is Disney, NBCU? I know the USFL is back.
Which that USFL thing made me think is, I don't know if the NFL ever bought the intellectual property or just whatever the league dissolved. They have it. But I always wonder, will this start a trend of people trying to use old territory company names and stuff like that? Like, hey, it's back. The USFL's back? Well, so is Continental Wrestling. Or maybe Dale Dagner shows up again and goes, the AWA is back.
Well, there's that weird Twitter account that was doing like, WCW will return or whatever, right?
And then they became ECW.
Yeah. WWE, I think, owns the trademarks for a lot of these. Like, you could look it up in the U.S. Patent and Trade Office site, probably, or that other Justia website or something. I would imagine AWA and World Class have not lapsed.
Probably are still pending, yeah.
But sometimes you think these things do lapse, and you're seeing a little bit of competition over that with some of the old WCW pay-per-view names, in terms of Bash of the Beach and things like that, between, I think, Cody trying to trademark those. I don't know if AEW is.
Yeah.
But yeah, what other brands would there be? Could you... The
USWA.
God, who cares about the USWA, though?
Somebody in Memphis does.
Well, the thing about Memphis is Memphis never had a really strong brand. I think the word that people use when they talk about Memphis is Memphis. They went through a number of different CWA and USWA and things like that.
Would the Florida Championship Wrestling trademark, there'd be a price still have that.
I don't know. See, the thing is, what about all these regional names like Mid-South, Mid-Atlantic?
Yeah.
I mean,
and you see people do that with a variation in their company.
Right.
They call themselves like NWA Mid-Atlantic or their Mid-South Pro.
Yeah. In discussions I've had with people who seem to know more about this, I always end up being surprised that the trademarks would work out that way. So I'm not super confident in speculating about this, but I would think it would be harder to trademark and to protect names that are just the names of regions, you know, like Mid-Atlantic, Mid-South. Maybe Continental, things like that.
Portland Wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always sort of told if you ask yourself the question, could this cause confusion in the marketplace? You know, GCW, for example, the fake GCW in Florida or whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, want to do final plugs?
Mm-hmm. What do you got?
Well, for me, you could check out Chris Gello at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and Rediscovering the Indies. We have a monthly podcast every month. If you haven't heard, we're doing our XPW deep dive. June will be the last part, which mostly delves into the court case of Rob Black.
Oh.
And other than that, we every day we post a This Day in Independent Wrestling History. So very cool if you're a wrestling historian. This is the day. Today, as we're recording, Brandon, in 2009, that Nick Gage almost died against Thumbtack Jack.
Wow. Fascinating. Yeah.
Those are the things you find on RTI Pod on Twitter and Rediscovering Indies on Instagram and Facebook.
You know, just hit me. 20 years ago today is the June 6, 2001, I guess, Budokan show with New Japan, which included, this is like the heyday of my tape trading days, of like a 38-minute chain wrestling match between Keiji Muto and Hiroshi Hase. This is where Takashi Iizuka gets knocked out legit by Mitsuya Nagai because he drops in the corner and Nagai's just like throwing kicks to the chest. He drops and boom, gets knocked out and is out for like months, a really long time. This is the Yuji Nagata and Kazuyuki Fujita match that is voted best bout. Solid 3.5-star match there. Best bout. This is what we had to deal with in 2001 in New Japan. But anyway.
You heard it first. Brandon Thurston's going to start This Day in New Japan Pro Wrestling History.
This Day in Enokiism. Do you have any wrestling bookings coming up?
Yeah. Mostly in July, but in June 19th. I'll be participating in a live demonstration seminar in Binghamton, New York.
Are you sure you want to advertise that and plug that?
It's a live demonstration seminar. You can buy a membership to be part of Club X.
Hopefully Glenn from the commission is not listening.
Glenn's not around anymore. July 3rd, same thing. And then on the 10th in July, I'm in NFW, New Jersey. July 24th, I'm doing MMA in Lockport, New York for Ground Force Fights. Yeah, so that's what we have.
Is that the
Keenan
Center?
Yeah, Keenan Center.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did you know this past week I went to the wrestling school, Grapplers Anonymous, for the first time in 14 months?
Talked about getting that ring rust off.
I didn't go in the ring, though. I have to earn it back. I have, so I'm doing mega cardio. I was extremely sore for like 3 days, but I'm better now and we'll be getting back to more cardio this coming week. I have an Excel
spreadsheet. When will you be accepting bookings?
More on that later. More on that to come. I have an Excel spreadsheet where I'm going to record my resting beats per minute heart rate, and hopefully that will be an indicator of the power of my cardio. It is currently, I think, 75 or something like that. But yeah, I did a ton of cardio. Well, relatively speaking, for my pandemic days, a ton of cardio this past week, and we'll be doing more. I think that's really the thing that I was, I don't know, most unhappy with about my wrestling performances, in that it costs so much cardio to do wrestling, both from being able to just sustain a match that's intense, but also to I don't know, perform the intensity. That costs a lot of cardio too. And I think as far as something that can be addressed, that's something that I think I would like to be much better at. So I'm going to do a lot of cardio before I'm even going to allow myself back in the ring. So it's going to be a little while before I go back.
Looking forward to it, though.
Yeah. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston. You can follow WrestleNomics on Twitter at WrestleNomics. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gull.
And we'll talk to you next time.